fun, but we're playing for keeps. So draw the curtain, honey, turn the lights down low. We'll find some country music on the radio. I'm yours and you're mine. Hey, that's what it's all about.
Jack's Country is WSOS Fruit Cove, Jacksonville. Jack's Country is 94.1 FM. Jack's Country is real country music. Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to our North Florida neighborhood.
Hey, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby, and North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really sweet stuff they're doing with us and for us in our community, our neighborhood. And today, the neighbors we get to chat with is Allison and Karen. They're here representing Any Given Child. And before we kind of dive into the new product that was just rolled out, Allison, can you give us a rundown on who Any Given Child actually represents?
Great question. Thank you, Colby. Thanks for letting us be here with you. So Ensuring the Arts for Any Given Child is actually a national initiative out of the Kennedy Center. It is an effort to go into communities, help them structure their collective impact projects around arts education. And Jacksonville was the 14th city to join this national network that is now up to about 27. And we're housed at the Cathedral Arts Project, which is the backbone organization for this initiative in Jacksonville and in Northeast Florida.
So just to unravel it a little bit, because it sounds like you are a part of a lot of different like strings that are attached. So would you still consider yourself under the umbrella of Any Given Child, or is it more so the Cathedral Arts Project?
I am an employee of the Cathedral Arts Project, and this Any Given Child project in Jacksonville is housed at the Cathedral Arts Project. What this project does is take a group of representatives from all over the community to address equity and access issues in arts education. So, for instance, my colleague here, Karen Fagans, is from PNC Bank. She sits on our steering committee and helps sort of guide the vision for arts education in our community from the perspective of business.
So since you kind of threw it to Karen, I want to throw it right back. Karen, what does it look like to integrate arts education in different areas of the community?
Well, it's something that's very important to PNC, and we've had a longstanding relationship with Any Given Child Jacksonville, because we've seen the impact that they've been able to have in our community in really advancing arts education in our schools. And at PNC, we know our company's success is a reflection of the strength of our community. And so we want to give back in the areas where our clients live and our employees work. And this particular project that we're working on right now, the ArtLook Map, it's just such an incredible product, and it made a lot of sense for us because it focuses on increasing access to the arts in Jacksonville and making sure that it's equitable for every child. And that's really critical and so important. And we've seen Any Given Child working on that successfully for many years, and we are proud to be a partner in that.
Karen, I'm not sure if this would be a question for you or Allison, but why arts? Why is that so magnified right now? Out of all programs and all projects, you guys chose art.
You live and breathe this every day, so I'm sure you're going to want to weigh in on this as well. But we know that supporting the arts is critically important for a community, because the arts are so important not only to the economy. We know that there are jobs in arts, and it's what makes living in a community really worthwhile. And when you introduce the arts to kids at a young age, it can really help them in so many ways. So I have two kids who are in arts programs in Duval County Schools. And I can tell you, you know, not only does it make them excited to go to school, but it benefits them in all of their other classes as well. And so they're learning about empathy, and they're learning about leadership, and it's all coming through this arts education. And You know, we want those types of things to be available for students throughout the district.
It's so interesting that when you cover the subject of art, it's not just that one subject, but like you said, and like you've noticed with your own kids, it's trickling into everyday life, and it sounds like even other subjects in school.
That's absolutely right. And Allison, you have studied this research for years and know all about it.
Yeah, I'm happy to chime in here. Thanks, Karen. I'm also a parent, so I can speak from the parent perspective as well. These are great choices for our own kids, but they're choices for great choices for every kid. So we know from decades and decades of research now, as the arts have been cut back, we as art supporters started doing this research, and we know the long-term impacts of the arts are really critical for well-rounded human beings and for functioning parts of society. We know that increased participation in the arts leads to civic engagement. We know it leads to greater levels of empathy and compassion. We understand that it creates new levels of grit and resilience in children and in adults. It gives people much higher levels of self-awareness, of sort of societal and cultural awareness. But we also know it directly impacts academics, how kids do in other areas of their academic performance, such as math, reading, science, and social studies. We know it's linked to higher graduation rates. This impact happens for every child, but it has been most significant in the research impacting low-income children. So this, the arts is really the way to close the gap between children, because it is a level of a point in which they can engage in learning that is both joyful and is accessible to every child. The arts have made a significant difference in children with autism, for instance. It's a communication tool that we start with as babies. It's before we can read, write, and talk. It only makes sense to continue building those skills as we get older, so that we can become adults that live and support and creative and innovative arts-rich communities.
Allison, thank you for hitting on that. And one thing I want to revisit, and I really want to dive into, is you said art helps close the gap. So what exactly is this gap?
Well, we know it's sort of a universally understood that there is an achievement gap, if you will. I hate to use that word almost, but between children, and it has to do with sort of support and resources, but it could be as broad as sort of systematic issues. It can be as broad as gender discrepancies. But the gaps that exist are often really narrowed when you introduce the arts. There's something about the arts that does what no other part of learning or schooling can do. It brings people together. It helps them learn about themselves. It helps them invent and create. And I talked about this recently with someone else, in fact, earlier this morning. But there is now neuroscience discoveries about how engagement in those artistic skill building and artistic practices helps you create connections in your brain and helps you with long and short-term memory, helps the different lobes of the brain talk to each other. So we know that this is not only social-emotional, we know that this is not only academic, but this is good for our brains and our bodies.
It sounds like overall that gap, it doesn't matter where you're from, what you're capable of, where you're going, but in that moment when you're connected with art, it brings that unity with your peers.
That's right. We talk about equity, and equity is giving people what they need when they need it, so that we all can reach the goal that we would like to reach. And the arts is that equalizer.
And just to clarify, I think for me who never really dove into the arts aspect of things until well after college. I assume art is just painting and drawing, but what does it look like executed in the school system?
We focus on the fine arts, which is visual arts, which is what you included, but it's also music, dance, theater, and it now includes things like media arts, which is exactly what you're doing, Colby. Media arts is film, television, radio. It is that portion of entertainment, and adds a technical aspect, sort of a new and broadening technical aspect to the arts.
So now,
so you are artistic, no matter what.
Thank you. I recently learned that. If everybody would ask, "Oh, do you draw or you are artsy?" and I always said no until I was having a conversation with my boss, and he said, "You are, the way you voice things, the way you create content." So now I can say, yes, I am an artist, just not in the typical way I thought when I was in elementary or even middle school. So what does it look like to involve those art programs and projects, like you just said, into school and into these kids' lives?
Well, I think you could go into any school in Duval County. In fact, most schools in America will tell you that when they introduce art programs, the kids are more engaged, they're more apt to show up for school, they have something that they can really sink their teeth into. And yes, some kids are not visually art inclined, but they might be musically or movement inclined, or they love to speak in public. That was never me, but, you know, art forms are a variety, and we sort of lump them as in this category, but what it means is, rather than the rote learning and the sort of repeat practice that we are giving our kids in school to sort of reinforce concepts in their academic knowledge, we're giving them a chance to explore and experiment and see what those other subjects mean in real life. So theater gives us a chance to social play. Dance gives us a chance to connect our body with each other, with the earth, and with our minds. Those connections are really important. Visual art gives us a form of communication, whether anyone ever sees it or not. It's a way of expressing and communicating feelings. For me, it's my therapy. And so we know those things are important at so many levels, both in social and in individual students. So what you'll see in any sort of micro or macrocosm of this is that students and adults really are happier and more engaged, and therefore can learn. They're getting the basics of what they need for their heart and their soul, and therefore they can do greater things.
And at the end of the day, I think you said it best, you're creating an opportunity for these students to explore. Because if it wasn't for my school system allowing me to explore, like, I probably would have had a very different career. But again, we have the privilege of chatting with Allison and Karen from Any Given Child, along with the Cathedral Arts Project. And one thing that the Cathedral Arts Project just unveiled was LEAD. Can you give us a rundown on what LEAD, first of all, stands for and what it's all about?
So we started this project titled LEAD, which is actually the Landscape of Education in the Arts in Duval. It was our idea to sort of study and make known the opportunities and gaps in arts education in Duval County. And that evolved to creating what is called the Art Look Map, and that's what we've just revealed this February. The Art Look Map takes all of the data we're collecting and populates the majority of it on a public-facing map system, so that if you're a parent, if you're an arts organization, if you're a school, you can go onto this map and look at the schools in our school system and the arts organizations in our community and see where the opportunities are in arts education. Our job with this map and with this initiative is to try to connect folks. So we're making, we're sort of writing large the opportunities in schools, both that exist and that are on the wish list of these principals and regional superintendents for the arts, And then we're connecting them with arts organizations, with the philanthropy sector, with parents and guardians, and with other community stakeholders to try to say, you know, these are the programs that you can support. These are the areas that we don't have programs and desperately need them. And these are the resources those programs need and how you can come help meet that need.
So that's something I want to hit on. What do you need in order for us to meet that need?
That's a good question. And, it's, you know, we've been working on this for 6 years now under the name of Any Given Child, and our needs evolve. So I'll just say, you know, early on, the need was for more teachers and more funding for programs, and the county came and delivered those things. And then it was about sort of supporting those programs through allowing them to become part of national competitions. There was some old rule that they couldn't travel outside of the state to compete like their sports peers. And so we had to have that lifted. Right now, we're talking specifically about the gaps in, we have a great offering in visual art and music, and what we're lacking is some of the opportunities in dance, theater, and media arts. Specifically around media arts, we're looking for the ability to resource some of those technical needs so that schools can have those opportunities and those programs. They're more expensive and a little bit harder to get off the ground, but they're important for our sort of evolution as a school district. The other thing we're trying to do is see where the gaps are in some of the other areas. So specifically, the Jacksonville Public Education Fund and Any Given Child are talking about teacher diversity. There's a lack of teacher diversity in the district overall, and it's very profound in the arts, in arts educators. So we're going to be looking at that specific area very shortly and attempting to put some things into place that help us address that, both in the district strategic plan and in the arts department strategic plan for Duval County Public Schools.
It's really interesting to hear how your needs have shifted so drastically from first being a legal issue with these kids can't go out of state, unlike their other peers, and now even financially and just with material. So, Karen, how have you been able to meet the needs for the Cathedral Arts Project?
Well, we're a philanthropic partner to Any Given Child Jacksonville and to many of the cultural service providers like the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens and MOSH. And we invest in the arts because we know the nonprofit arts and culture industry is an economic driver in Florida. And we know that it encourages social engagement, and especially for kids. I mean, when we talk about arts education, the arts have such great value for kids, providing a source of beauty and creativity. So this is why we are a philanthropic partner with Any Given Child Jacksonville. And with this specific project, we hope that it brings more funders into the fold because, you know, if Allison's talking about the schools that need media arts funding, and a funder can look at this map and see where that need is and see that there's some inequity and where that's available in the district, hopefully they will see the value of contributing in the same way that PNC Bank is, and it will help them see where they can make the most impact. And that's why we are really excited about this specific project.
And what do you think with this project, what is both of y'all's long-term goals? What do you hope comes out of it?
I just want to add to Karen's earlier comments that PNC has been our sort of foundational local funder, and they've really sort of set the tone. So, for instance, last year we were going to award specific grants to schools, and then COVID hit, and Karen and I and the folks at PNC talked about the shifted need. And so with their funding, we were able to very quickly change, and we purchased from a local art store supplies and created home art kits for kids all over the county. So we actually packaged and delivered just over 1,000 home art kits for kids all over. So, you know, funders like PNC not only are providing those resources, but they're being a partner. They're understanding what the needs are, how they shift, and how they can be a part of it. So my hope, you know, Karen said it best here, my hope is that PNC sets the tone, and that we see other sort of philanthropic foundations, organizations, and even individuals being able to use this map in real time to contribute. The big picture here is that we're trying to let everyone know that an issue like equity and access for arts education is something that happened over a long period of time, that was very systematic, and that we all either contributed to or let happen, and therefore we all have a duty and a responsibility to reverse it. It is not one superintendent, one school system, one nonprofit job to do this work, but it is within and the duty of all of us to address this. And something like this map allows us to see where we can start contributing as individuals, as businesses like PNC, as arts organizations like the Comer, and as a sort of a city entity. So we hope the city will make action and take action on how they can support arts organizations throughout the community as well.
And Karen, I mean, Allison definitely put you guys on the stage full blast with how great y'all have been and how much you have helped. So what are you hoping to accomplish during this time?
Well, I think that she said it very well, and thank you so much, Allison. But I think what's really unique about this particular project is, you know, a lot of times, not only individuals, but companies are looking for data to understand when they give, what their gift is going to accomplish. And this ArtLook map provides that data. It's actual real-time information that they can look at to help them make decisions. So I'm very hopeful that it provides the type of information that individuals and businesses need to make those decisions.
And one thing, Allison, you said is we all have a responsibility. So what do you need your community to do? What's it look like for us to come behind you and link arms and walk forward?
Well, it's interesting. This is a tool that gets better with use. So right now we have just under half of the schools on the map. We have a good handful of arts organizations. But what we want is for more schools, more arts organizations, artists to populate their information on the map, but also people to start using it and asking questions. So we're here to collect information and to start hopefully answering some of those questions. And if folks want to get involved in AGC as an effort, they can certainly contact us through the Cathedral Arts Project. I also would say to anyone listening who wants to make an effort that, you know, checking in with your local school, your local arts organizations, supporting those people through this very difficult year that that continues is going to be really important. We are at a crossroads right now where we could lose some things significantly that are part of our community, that are part of this effort, if we aren't supporting them now. So I would say if you can buy a ticket to a performing arts venue, if you can contribute to your local PTA or drive for a school in your neighborhood. Those are all really important small things that you can do to help help us all sort of lift through this current situation so that we can go back to the good work of arts education in our schools.
And what's the best way to get a hold of the Cathedral Arts Project?
Anyone can contact me at allison@capkids.org. That's A-L-L-I-S-O-N at C-A-P-K-I-D-S.org. And you can also visit the Cathedral Arts website, capkids.org, to learn more about what we provide in direct services to kids, but also how Any Given Child works in our community.
Thank you. And Karen, what's the best way to contact you and just hear what all PNC is doing for the community?
I guess follow me on Twitter. It's at Karen Fagans, and it's K-A-R-E-N-S-E-A-G-I-N-S. I post a lot of information about PNC and about arts and culture organizations in our community.
Well, thank you guys both for being such great neighbors in our neighborhood.
Thank you, Colby.
Thank you, Colby. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week, and if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.
You're invited to the biggest party in town. The Clay County Agricultural Fair turns 35, and what a ride it's been. Come safely join the celebration from April 1st through April 11th with the return of your fair favorites, rides, food, entertainment, and the star of the fair, the animals. Visit claycountyfair.org for COVID information and to get discount tickets through March 31st. Make it a family affair to remember.
A plumbing problem is an immediate problem. You can't wait around for a convenient time for a plumber to stop by. Roland Reich Plumbing is Jacksonville's award-winning get-it-done-right-away plumber. Call as soon as you see a problem. Call 904-260-7059. Whether the problem is large or small, routine or a middle-of-the-night emergency, Roland Reich Plumbing is standing by to get it done right, on time, and at the right price. Call 904-260-7059. Your friends and neighbors have relied on Roland Reich Plumbing for years. Roland's motto is, have a leak? No need to wait a week. Call Roland Reich Plumbing at 904-260-7059. Check them at plumbingjacksonville.com. Make Roland Reich Plumbing your plumber. Gives you peace of mind knowing somebody's standing by ready to help you 24/7. Roland Reich Plumbing, 904-260-7059.
Introducing touch-free payments from PayPal, a safe way for your customers to pay. Simply download the PayPal app and display your own unique QR code for your customers to scan. Whether you're a market seller,
I'll take two tomatoes and a cucumber,
poodle pamperer, piano tuner, or plumber, signing up to accept touch-free payments for your business is easy. Touch-free QR code payments. Shop safe with PayPal.
Is finding the clothes that you love in just the right fit and size an overwhelming task? Experience a new way to shop with Stitch Fix. Our experts hand-select pieces so you can get the ease of personal styling from the convenience of home. Every piece is curated just for you, for staying home or on the go in your unique style. With Stitch Fix, there's never any subscription required, and it's delivered right to your door. Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, your style delivered.
It's spring, time to take in a breath of fresh savings on appliances at the Home Depot's Spring Savings Event. In-store, online, all season long. Save on top appliances from top brands. Plus, get free and flexible delivery on any appliance $396 or more. From cooking and cleaning to washing and drying, your timing couldn't be better. Bring on spring with the Spring Savings Event, now at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only while supplies last, valid through April 28th.
Does learning a language feel like this?
No habla español.
Hablo.
It's hablo?
Yes.
It's hablo.
When you learn a language, you want to actually use it. Babbel is designed with that goal in mind.
Since my husband is from Guatemala, I'll apply what I've learned in Babbel to our real life situations.
The app is so easy to use and it's so practical. It helps you learn things that you will actually need.
Babbel, language for life. Celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com. B-A-B-B-E-L.com.
Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood.
Hey, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby. A North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really sweet stuff they're doing with us and for us in our community. And today, the neighbor we get to chat with is Eileen Briggs. She's the Chief Development Officer for Sulzbacher. Eileen, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Before we kind of dive into everything, first, can you give us an overview on who the Sulzbacher is?
Sure. Well, we've been around for 25 years, serving the Jacksonville community, and we were started in the 90s. There really was an explosion of homelessness really across the country in the 90s, and so some community leaders got together, the United Way, the City of Jacksonville, and what they wanted was to have a center of services where someone who was experiencing homelessness could go and they could receive everything that they needed. They could receive a warm bed and a hot meal and a case manager to help them and medical care. And so we were born out of that. And over the past 25 years, we've grown exponentially. The community in Jacksonville is incredibly compassionate, and they have really supported our growth through those 25 years. And, you know, what we have today is we call ourselves Housing, Healthcare, and Hope for people in need. And so our services have grown and really expanded to respond to the need.
This is going to be super broad, but what do you think is the most change you've seen in the past 25 years?
I would say the main thing that we have seen is the shift from people who are experiencing homelessness being primarily single men back in the 90s to what we've seen for the past, I would say, 10 years at least, is the explosion of families, particularly single women with young children. So at this point, for the people that are coming to us seeking emergency shelter, we are typically seeing a young woman with two or maybe three young children, school age or preschool age children. And so the need has really changed. As you can imagine, serving someone like that, a family unit like that, we're going to have different services and a different approach. So that really has been surprising to us, and it really continues. And, you know, with the pandemic happening, and we've seen on the news about how so many more women have lost their jobs, and mothers are now, you know, having to teach their kids homeschool. We're continuing to see that now with the eviction moratorium. When that is lifted, we're anticipating having an even greater need when that happens.
Now, currently, as we've kind of shifted from the growth that you've experienced, what services do you offer to both men, women, and children?
So we offer housing, a really full, broad spectrum of housing, from someone who is literally on the streets or sometimes sleeping in their car. They can come to us. We can give them an emergency bed. They can continue to stay on that bed as long as they need to until we can get them into a more permanent housing situation. We have a really large network, probably about 250 scattered site apartments throughout the community of Jacksonville. And we've had those for many years. And those are serving people who have either a serious mental health disorder or some other kind of physical disability. We're able to use HUD funding from the federal government to subsidize those rents and then offer supportive services so that these people can maintain that housing and not come back into a homeless situation. We also have a permanent housing site at our Sulzbacher Village campus, which opened back in 2018. And we have 70 units of affordable housing at that location. We were very, very proud to be able to add 70 units of affordable housing to the housing stock in Jacksonville when that location opened, because there's just a huge need, and we have a huge waiting list for all of our housing opportunities. So, you know, we could build three more villages and we would still be able to fill them up. So that's the housing end of the spectrum. Probably the most basic service that we provide is meals, and that we have been doing since day one. We have been providing meals to anyone in the community who's hungry. can come for lunch or dinner to our downtown location, and they will be served a warm meal and be able to, you know, sit in our dining area and have that meal. And if they're interested, they can, we can, you know, enroll them in additional services. But at that service, we actually have people who do have housing that come to us because they can't afford both rent and food. And so they choose to pay their rent and their electric bill, and then they come to us for food. We even have families with children that get in that line, which is unfortunate. And then in addition to those services, probably over 50% of what we do now is healthcare. So we have had a health clinic since about a year after we opened. We started providing health services at our downtown location, and that program has just grown amazingly. We are a federally qualified health center, which means that we get the bulk of our funding from the federal government to provide free or sliding fee scale health care to anyone in the community who needs it. So we do serve people who are homeless or at risk of being homeless, but we take insurance. We can serve everybody. And what is really unique about our health care services is that we have primary care, behavioral health, dental and vision, and it's all under one roof. So that is something that doesn't exist anywhere else in our community. I don't know about you, but you know, my doctor never talks to my dentist.
No.
So to be able to have all of those people under one roof and coordinating care, you know, particularly for people who have chronic conditions like diabetes or those types of things, really is a unique service. So we're really proud of our clinic. At the downtown location, we have a satellite location at the beach. And then when we opened our Sulzbacher Village location, we opened up a pediatric health center for the children there. So that's kind of a the broad overview of all the things that we do in town.
And I'm so glad you were broad, because just out of ignorance, I assumed that y'all were just a homeless shelter. And you're saying, no, we're so much more to so many more people.
Yeah.
Even if you have a home, or even if you have a car, or even if you don't need food, you guys offer so many things in so many different areas.
Yeah, we do. And that's a really common reaction, like you had it. You know, we do tours. We're not doing tours right now, but we will do tours again. And we bring people through the facility and show them what we do and talk about it at the same time. And that's exactly what they said. And in fact, we quote it. They say, I had no idea, because we do so much. Yeah. And especially the clinic. It really is a beautiful facility. And the village as well is brand new. And it's really a beautiful housing community.
You're really like a one-stop shop. But where do you think you guys meet the most needs at? In what area?
I would say the emergency shelter is a really critical need. And, you know, we've seen that people who are visible, you know, the visibly street homeless people that you see when you're driving around town, that need is huge. And there are not enough beds in town to support everybody who would need them. So we do unfortunately have to turn people away for our emergency beds, and we have wait lists for those, and I believe the other shelters in town do as well. So that's a really critical, it's really the foundation of what we do, is to provide that emergency housing when people are in crisis, bring them in, assess them, and get them into the other services that we need. That service, and then the healthcare is huge. If you think about, you know, all the conversation around healthcare these days, on a national level, about the uninsured and the fact that Florida does not have expanded Medicaid access for people who are living in poverty, particularly single men. So typically these people will either not go to the doctor at all because they can't get into a doctor because they don't have insurance and they can't pay for it, or they just wait until they're very sick and then they go to the emergency room. And that really is a drag on the hospital's funding to continue to serve people for free who are not insured and not able to pay. And the hospitals have to write those costs off, which is, you know, it hurts their hurts their financial situation. So to have a clinic like ours downtown at the beach, at the Village, where someone can come and receive all of these high quality healthcare services, dental, we can give them dentures, we can give them eyeglasses. If someone is experiencing a mental health problem, we can provide them with medications for depression or anxiety, something that would be really key to having a person be able to function in their life. They come in and they know either it's free or it's on a sliding scale and they will be able to afford it. So something as small as, you know, $10, $25, to be able to get something like eyeglasses or dentures, it really is huge. And it's allowing a lot of people who aren't homeless to maintain the house that they're in. So it really is a wonderful prevention program as well in that regard.
And do you find that people are a lot more apt to come and go to the doctor or doctors or go to the dentist when they know that it's not going to charge them an arm and a leg since they don't have insurance?
Absolutely. And we are a referral source for so many other agencies. You know, if someone is working with the food bank, for example, or if they are, you know, interacting with the Department of Children and Families or any other organization, you know, the churches in town, they know that if one of their church members has a financial hardship and they've lost their job, they've lost their insurance, they know that they can send them to us. And, you know, I've seen it time and again where people really feel like they don't know where to go for health care. They're having to delay health care or just not get it at all, and then come to us and realize, oh, wow, there is a place for me. You know, this organization really cares, and we have wonderfully caring staff that can help people navigate all of the complexities of healthcare. We actually have people that work on something called a patient assistance program, which is a program that almost all of the pharmaceutical companies have. If you get prescribed a medication and you don't have any insurance, you know, it's going to cost an arm and a leg most times. And we have caseworkers that work directly with the clients to get them enrolled in these programs so that they can get free medication. You know, if you have no income, you're going to qualify, but navigating that process can be, you know, pretty tricky, especially for someone in crisis. So we have people that specifically help our patients get the medications that they need, which are life-saving in some cases. So it's just really, it's wonderful to see the stories. You know, we like to tell the individual stories of someone who, you know, really thought that they had no hope anymore. And then they come to us, we're able to help them, they get stabilized on their medication, and, you know, they're very, very thankful. It's really a wonderful thing to see.
Well, again, I have the privilege of chatting with Eileen Briggs, the Chief Development Officer for Sulzbacher. And Eileen, you were just talking about these stories that you're able to share of just life-changing events in these people's lives. Can you give me a specific story where you saw just the success roll through, and most of it's because the Sulzbacher was at the core of that?
We do. It's a story that we told at one of our events a couple of years ago of a gentleman, and he had his own apartment. He had a small income that he was living on, and he had a serious issue with diabetes. And he was seeing a doctor, but the insurance was not covering the medications that he needed. And he said to us that he had decided that he was just going to go ahead and die. He couldn't afford the medicine. He didn't want to be a burden on his children, his adult children. And he said he'd had a good life, and he was just ready to go ahead and die so that he wouldn't be a burden on his kids. And then a friend of his said, you need to go downtown to Sulzbacher and see the doctor at Sulzbacher. And we got him in, and he truly says that we saved his life. So those kind of stories, you know, it makes everything worthwhile. that we're doing.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Because like I said from the beginning, you see Sulzbacher as a homeless shelter, but no, it's something as minor, but in this man's life, major, not being able to afford his medicine.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really a wonderful program. The doctors and nurses that work in our clinics, you know, they're very caring. And, you know, if you think about a medical professional, they can kind of choose where they want to work. If you're a doctor or a nurse, you know, you can go work in a different setting. And so they're just wonderful people that care about the clients and they care about the mission. And, you know, it's just a great group of people down there.
So what is the Sulzbacher mission?
So our mission is to empower homeless and at-risk women, children, and men through health, housing, and income services, thereby restoring hope and self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And our tagline is housing, healthcare, and hope. And we changed that a couple of years ago to add that, just to emphasize the healthcare part, because, like you said, people didn't realize that mm-hmm. About half of our organization really is dedicated to healthcare. And then the housing part really represents kind of a shift that we've made over the last 25 years to adopt what we call a housing first approach. So when we first started, we brought people into an emergency shelter, we assessed them, you know, we said, okay, well, you need to get a job, you know, you need to do this and this and this. And if you do all these things right, then you get an apartment. Mm. But there's been a shift. It's a national shift. And there's been a lot of studies on this to show that, you know, if you have the housing subsidy available, it really makes more sense to take that person almost immediately off the street and put them into the apartment. That way, they are able to accomplish their goals much quicker. I mean, if you just think about it, if you can put yourself in the person's shoes and think, you know, if you're living in a homeless shelter and you're sharing a room with a bunch of people you don't know, you're probably not sleeping really well. You know, what's your mood going to be like? How are you going to feel versus if you're in your own apartment and, you know, you have a few months of time where you can get your business together, get a job, whatever it is. So that housing first model really has been a shift for us. And that's why our tagline emphasizes those three things. So housing, healthcare, and hope. And the hope just represents all the, you know, all of the good things that we pour into people so that they can be successful.
One thing, Eileen, this is something I wonder, how do you determine who gets placed in an apartment? Like, and then do you just give them a certain amount of time and say, hey, if you don't have a steady income by this date, like, I'm sorry, but you have to leave? What's the protocol for that?
Well, our housing mix is really, it's kind of like a patchwork quilt mm-hmm. of programs that are funded mostly through HUD, but there are a variety of funding sources for the housing that we have. And you know, a certain program is going to be for people who have a physical disability. We have a program specifically for veterans. We have programs specifically for families with children. So there really isn't a general, you know, oh, you have to be by this date. Mm-hmm. It really is dependent upon that person. For example, somebody that has a severe and persistent mental illness is going to be on disability. And so we're going to be able to move them into apartment with their disability funding coming in, and that's going to be a permanent placement for them. For the single men who don't have disabilities, it's going to look a little different. Mm. And we wouldn't necessarily be able to provide them a subsidy for a long period of time. So we really don't have, like, you know, our services, we always try to tailor them to the person as much as possible and individualize them. You know, the common denominator with all of them is that they are either homeless or about to be homeless. So we can actually work with some people who have pending evictions or something like that too.
I really appreciate how you didn't just give a straight up answer, but how basically you said it depends on the situation because every situation is so different.
Right.
Y'all do so much for the community. What can your community do for you?
Well, I'll say Jacksonville is an incredibly compassionate community. So we have a fundraiser every year called Transformations, where we tell stories about the people whose lives have been transformed at our organization. And we get donations from the community, from local businesses, from churches. You know, it really is a wonderful group effort where everybody comes together for our big annual fundraiser. We weren't able to have it in person last year. Obviously, we had a virtual one. But this year, we are hopeful to have it in person. So, you know, we love for people to come to that, to be able to hear about more about what we do. That's always a great night to celebrate everything that we do. The other wonderful thing that the community does for us is the volunteering. Our volunteer program is really robust. There's a wide variety of volunteer opportunities that we have. The most basic that I'll highlight, which I think is, you know, to me the most compelling, if I was volunteering, that's what I would want to do, is to serve a meal. Mm-hmm. So we have volunteer groups come in, and this has been happening since 1995. We actually have some groups that have been coming once a month since 1995 to serve a meal to our clients. And you get a group of people together, so maybe 8 to 10 people. We have like churches, for example, and then that church community will sign up a different group every month. And you come in and you prepare the meal and you serve and you clean up. And it really is, I mean, you know, if you can think about what's more, you know, satisfying than giving someone a warm meal, you know, when they're hungry, when they're lined up for a meal. So we love to have new groups come in. We usually have, excuse me, open spots for that. Right now we're closed for volunteers. But with all the vaccination going on, you know, we really hope that that'll be opening back up soon. And you can just go to our website and click on Get Involved, and it'll have a list of the different volunteer opportunities that we have.
And you say go to your website. What's the best website for that?
So it's soulsbackerjacks.org. That's S-U-L-Z as in zebra, B-A-C-H-E-R. JAX.org.
All right. Well, Eileen, thank you so much for being such a great neighbor in our neighborhood.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.